Maybe you like cooking. Maybe you don't. Either way, the new Blue Apron is for you. Because along with our classic meal kits, we're offering new pre-made and one-pan meals to help you get dinner on the table fast. And now there's no subscription needed, so you can just order and enjoy. Do delicious food your way. Shop 100-plus meals at blueapron.com. Get 50% off your first two orders with code APRON50. Terms and conditions apply. Visit blueapron.com/terms for more.
All right, back on the Jeff Calkins Show. Let's do this Chris Herrington deal. Chris Herrington joins me now. Chris, what are we listening to?
That's Best Guess by Lucy Dacus from her newish album, Forever is a Feeling. It's a record I was listening to on my dog walk this morning, so I thought I'd give her a little pub.
What's the temperature on your dog walk in the morning in the Twin Cities? Is there chill in the air? Is there a nip in the air?
This morning, it's not the same every day, but right. This morning, I don't know. I didn't look at my phone, but it was probably mid-60s.
That sounds lovely. All right, I want to get to your to the piece you wrote about what's happening in movies in Memphis this week. But before I do that, while I was away, we did have some schedule news, and obviously we're going to get the Grizzlies schedule release, the league schedule release tomorrow. But some of the stuff that we know, one is we have opening night, Lakers, Warriors, and OKC, Houston, with Kevin Durant going back to Oklahoma City. What do you think of that, about that opening pair of games?
Well, I mean, the striking thing to me is that if you look at Luka Doncic is actually the best player on the Lakers team. But if you look at the graphic that was put out to promote it, you know, there's one player shown for every team. And so three of the four players are Steph Curry, LeBron James, and Kevin Durant. Are we just going to be wheeling these guys out in wheelchairs for the national TV games at some point? And so it's a little disappointing. I get it, but it's got to be a little disappointing from an NBA perspective that like those guys who are all nearing the very end are still like the name brand guys. You got those three guys and the team that won the title who has the MVP, right? It's not Nikola Jokic. It's not Giannis. It's not Anthony Edwards. It's not whoever. And so you're still like, that's who you're promoting. LeBron James, Kevin Durant, Steph Curry. Like, I don't think that's really great for the league, but I get it. They are all-time greats.
It's interesting. Yes, so they're all-time greats. And right now, if you were to say, what games, like, what are the guaranteed sellouts for the Grizzlies? It's when the Warriors are coming to town, when the Lakers are coming to town. I mean, much more so than when the Thunder are coming to town or when the Timberwolves are coming to town.
It's reality, right?
It's funny.
But I'm a believer. I'm a believer in doing some leading and not just following.
Right.
Like, so I think, you know, I think they can do a better job of promoting things to create interest instead of just following interests that already exist, right. You know?
I was going to say, I think it's just sort of reality that what has happened is these are all-time greats, and then the group behind them, for one reason or another, Jokic does the same level of greatness, but you could, for one reason or another, they haven't connected. I mean, isn't that? And then the question is how much of that is the fault of the league? Yeah, go ahead.
The best players in the group right below them age wise, and these are the guys who won five straight MVPs. Among them was Jokic, Giannis, and Embiid. You talk about three big men and three essentially international players. Embiid played American college ball, but three big men, three international players, and I think there's, for whatever reason, in terms of interest, there's a strike against big men and there's a strike against international guys, and so these are international big men, you know? Two of them are in Milwaukee and Denver.
It's funny, is it true that big men, I guess Shaq, like what big men have been draws? Tim Duncan certainly never was to you, but like right. Tim Duncan never was Kareem, you know? Shaq, I guess,
Kareem
was.
Kareem wasn't. Yeah, Shaq was. Kareem and Wilt probably was. Shaq and Wilt were overwhelming athletes and also big personalities.
Right.
Duncan and Kareem were more skill and length. They didn't overwhelm you by like ripping the rim down. They were also quieter personalities in some ways. Kareem not quiet in other ways. But I also think, you know, I think the game has changed some away from the big men, right. And also I think, you know, a lot of casual fans, younger fans sort of like the driving, dunking, deep shooting, more of that style is sort of, you know, people is perceived as more exciting.
Yeah, I wonder if Hakeem the Dream, I don't think he never packed him in. Like, whatever, he was a second-level star in terms of right. in terms of box office stuff. All right, so we have Lakers Warriors, but that is the issue. And then, of course, you have the interesting Durant going back to OKC. And evidently, that was like a real exchange on Twitter where someone, you know, asked him about Oklahoma City winning a title. And he said, finally, it's been 10 years, which it seems right. small, whatever.
Yeah, I mean, he likes to respond to stuff on social media. I mean, probably, you know, whether that's a good thing or bad, you know, eye of the beholder. But that is a thing he does.
Right. Okay. So then we I'll go to Christmas Day, too. A lot. It's a full schedule Christmas Day. What do you think of this slate? Knicks, Cavs. I got it for you here. Ready? Knicks, Cavs. Thunder, Spurs. Warriors, Mavs. Lakers, Rockets. Nuggets, T-Wolves.
You know, you finally got some Eastern Conference action going on. I think, I can't remember all of that, but so, are those the only two East teams, Knicks and Cavs? Is there another East team on there?
Interesting. Knicks and Cavs are the only East team. Knicks and Cavs. After that, it's Thunder, yeah. Thunder Spurs, Warriors, right. Mavs, Lakers, Rockets, and Nuggets, T-Wolves. That's striking.
You know, the Mavericks thing is interesting. I think that's a real bet. Obviously, they've just been in the news a lot. The fact that they traded away Luka probably helps them just because they've been so part of the conversation. There's so much right. soap opera around them. But it's also a bet on Cooper Flagg, you know? I mean, the NBA will place bets on these young players. And, like, you know, the Grizzlies had their chance. They got a Christmas Day game. They got a huge amount of national TV games, and then it blew up on them because of Morant off-court and injury stuff. And who knows if they'll get back to that. You know, there was a time where Zion, they were really trying to get him going on national TV. And now, you know, Cooper Flagg, there's a hope there. And so the NBA likes to place bets on these young players. Anthony Edwards is on that list. I mean, those are good teams, Minnesota and Denver. But yeah, I think the conference imbalance sort of hurts in terms of that because Celtics would almost be a given for a national TV slot.
Celtics and Bucks are notable because of Giannis and because the Celtics are they're not. I just right. listed, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 games between those two nights, and there's no 14 teams. There's no Celtics and there's no Bucks.
Right. Well, I mean, the Pacers were just in the finals, and Indiana is not a team that will be in that situation. But if Halliburton hadn't gotten hurt, you know, maybe they would be as a defending conference champion, right? The Celtics, if they had a real team together, would. I'm almost surprised Celtics aren't there anyway.
I am too.
Just from a brand standpoint. But, yeah, I mean, you know, that is always that Christmas Day slate is 10 teams, 10 out of 30. And that's a pretty good indicator of who the league and the TV partners think are the higher profile teams for the season.
And so who's
not necessarily the 10 best teams, but the 10 most general interest teams.
Yeah. All right. Moving on to film. What is High and Low, Chris? You wrote about it today.
Well, Highest to Lowest is the movie coming out this weekend, but it's a remake of High and Low. So High and Low is an Akira Kurosawa movie. If people may or may not be familiar with Kurosawa, he's pretty well known. He's a Japanese filmmaker. Mid-century, best known for a samurai movie, Seven Samurai, maybe the greatest action movie ever. But he didn't only make samurai movies. My favorite movie of his that's not in the samurai genre of the ones I've seen is High and Low, which is from the early 60s. And it's more of a police procedural thriller kind of story. It's about a tycoon, a captain, titan of industry who sent a ransom note. I don't want to get into the plot details of what the ransom note's about, but that sort of sets the plot in motion. And so Highest to Lowest, which comes out this weekend, Spike Lee is doing a remake of that movie starring Denzel Washington. Instead of, you know, early 60s Tokyo, it is set in contemporary New York, and Denzel Washington plays a music mogul who gets a ransom note, and the plot goes from there.
Have you seen it?
But High and Low is...
It is not
High and Low or Highest to Lowest?
No, you haven't seen Highest and Lowest. It's not out yet. It's coming.
It's a wide release. It'll open this weekend.
I see. So you have high hopes for it. You believe it remake was.
Well, we'll see. I love Spike Lee. I mean, I love the original. That's not necessarily. Sometimes you dread a remake of a movie you like,
right.
But I think Spike Lee knows his Kurosawa, and I think it's an interesting concept to to transition to present day and in America. And so I'm interested to see it. Yeah.
Okay. A couple other things. One is there's a film called Americana out, and it Sydney Sweeney is in it. And I was surprised. We got a 2-sentence commentary from you on the Sydney Sweeney debate that I happily missed all last week when I was out. What do you think of the Sydney Sweeney debate that America has been having?
It's one of these things that happens all the time when I go on social media where I see people reacting to the thing without ever seeing the thing. And I don't know whether that's something to do with my social media or it's because I suspect it's because there's a forced reaction. So I see it's one of those things where you open up Twitter, which I try not to do as much anymore, but you open it up. If you forget to click the following tab, it'll give you the For You tab or whatever, which is stuff you don't want to see. And so I'll click on that and I'll see people like gloating. Ah, the liberals are going crazy about this Sydney Sweeney ad. And I have not encountered a single person going crazy about the Sydney Sweeney ad. As far as I know, like, people are not up in arms about this. I'm sure some wackos are up in arms about it, but like I guess there are a handful of wackos who are offended by the ad. There are a handful of wackos who are gloating about the other wackos being offended with the ad. And so there's like wackos talking to each other about it. But like, I think most people in the world don't really care. It's like, look, she's an attractive woman wearing jeans. They made a pun in an ad. Let's move on to the next thing in our lives. Right.
Yeah, I think what happened there was, there's a handful of wackos who were somehow offended by the ad. But let's be honest, it profits folks on one side of the debate.
But does it? I saw some news story about how their sales are down. So
No. I'm not saying it profits them. It profits folks on one side of the American debate to make the wackos seem typical of everyone who's blue.
Right.
That's what happened here is that I have not seen anyone object to the ad, and yet, it suggested that anyone who votes blue was enraged by the Sydney Sweeney appearing in blue jeans. So, anyway, what's the movie? What's the film?
So the movie, it's called Americana. I don't know much about it other than it's set in South Dakota. I'm interested. There are two movies set in South Dakota opening in Memphis this weekend. It's supposed to be some kind of comedy, and she's in it, and Paul Walter Hauser, who I think is very funny, he was recently in the Fantastic Four movie, is in it, and it seems like it's gotten decent reviews, but it's a kind of a small little dark comedy set, you know, in South Dakota. I don't really know a lot about it.
You did like Weapons.
Yeah, I like Weapons quite a bit. You know, just not for all tastes, most things aren't, but it's not, I mean, it's definitely got some gory stuff to it. But it's not as confrontationally horror-oriented as this guy's previous movie, Barbarian, was. I think it's a little more open to general interest. And it's just really, really well-made, interesting filmmaking, like from the camera work to the structure to the sense of humor to the music. Like, this guy was really good at making movies, and I like watching movies made by people who are good at making movies. It's a mystery kind of thing, and like a lot of things like that, the mystery itself is more compelling probably than the resolution of the mystery. It's kind of hard to pull off a good resolution, so like the TV series Lost. But I think it does have a big finish that is a truly like laugh and shock and delight if you have a stomach for it, kind of like I didn't quite see this coming kind of big finish to it. It's really good. If you have any kind of stomach for things that are quasi-horror, I think people should go see it.
All right, then we have two old films that are being shown in Memphis of note that I noted from your piece, The Big Lebowski at the Pink Palace and The Sound of Music Sing-Along at the Orpheum.
Are you going to go, belt it out?
I am not going to go. I could sing every word. That is true. Have you ever seen The Sound of Music in total?
I am not, and it just doesn't seem like something I would like.
Right.
I did note I went on Letterboxd, and like the average Letterboxd grade for The Sound of Music is 4.2. That's out of 5, so that's really high. And some of the critics I follow give it a high mark. Some of them don't, but some of them do. But like, it just doesn't. I've never actually read anything by anyone that makes me think I would like it, and it's 3 hours long, and so I've never seen it.
Well, it would depress me as someone who enjoys The Sound of Music. You know, it's a song. It's a movie I grew up with. We watched it all the time. It's that Christopher Plummer hated it, was embarrassed that he was in it, evidently. And so that's never good. Anyway, you can sing along with it at the Orpheum. And then The Big Lebowski at Pink Palace. What is the best Coen Brothers film?
My favorites are Inside Llewyn Davis and A Serious Man, although I would put The Big Lebowski third. And so if I were looking for some consensus pick, like, hey, we all have to get together and watch a Coen Brothers movie, right, what's the best one to pick? I would pick The Big Lebowski, which I think is fantastic. But my personal favorites are Inside Llewyn Davis, which I think a lot of people really love, and then A Serious Man, which is a little bit more obscure in the context of Coen Brothers movies.
All right. Thank you, Chris. Appreciate it.
Thanks.
You can read the full rundown on what's happening in film in Memphis over at the Daily Memphian. One thing, Jeffrey, on the NBA schedule, because we were during the break, we were going over the NBA schedule, and we were going over what the first games are, the opening night, and then the Christmas Day games, and then the MLK games. Memphis obviously not included in that. And you were going to tell me the first NBC games, right?
Correct.
When in the calendar do they fall?
So it is going to be the first week. All right, here we go. This is from Ben Axelrod at Awful Announcing. NBC announces the NBA plans, including the season opener, the Peacock debut, and Sunday night basketball. On Tuesday, the network made a series of announcements connected to its upcoming coverage, including the Peacock's debut doubleheader, a MLK Junior Day quadrupleheader, and the launch of the Sunday night basketball program.
Are all the MLK games going to be on just Peacock?
That is the case. Let me double check for you because I
all the MLK games.
Yes, they are all on either Peacock or NBC.
Well, okay, those are different though. NBC is different than Peacock.
Correct, but they're NBC properties.
Yes, but in terms of their accessibility to the larger viewer. And so then I asked you, if you want to watch every Grizzlies game,
yep,
what do you need? And you started to tell me what you need, and then
left one off.
What do we think? Do we know? Are we certain of the answer to this?
Okay.
If you want to watch every Grizzlies game this year, what will we need?
You will need Peacock, Prime Video.
Okay. Prime Video, what's Peacock going to carry? Just a few select
Peacock will carry
NBC games.
And Cup games.
Okay.
They're going to have Cup games. But yes, it is more of
a... Prime Video going to carry Pete and Brevin?
So my understanding is you can purchase the local TV package through Prime Video. I believe that became available last
year. Okay. Is there another way to get the local pack TV
Correct.
Package?
You could also purchase directly from the FanDuel Live app.
Okay.
So you will need that.
And are those the only two ways of getting the local package?
The other ways of getting the local package would be to...
But do you need both of those things? Can you just have one of those, Prime Video or the FanDuel Live app?
No. The either or options would be... You can either have the FanDuel Live app that gets you the local games, or you can have your local cable satellite provider. If you purchase the package and that is moved up a tier, if you purchase the package that will include live local broadcast. And then you also need ESPN.
Oh, my God.
Oh, I mean, Herd sent me yesterday.
Do I need all of them?
You might be okay with...
If I get a cable package with an upper tier.
You
right?
get... On your U-verse, you got Grizzlies games, correct?
Yes.
Okay. So what you will need in addition is Peacock, Prime Video...
Why do I need that? If I have the cable, if I'm getting it through my the Grizzlies games...
You will need Prime Video for the other Nationals. Like, again, you might be able to go without... But if it's an exclusive Prime Video broadcast, you will need that. Herd sent me this yesterday. I'm trying to find this. This was from Say Cheese TV on Twitter. To watch the entire NFL season, it will cost fans over $1,000. The ESPN direct-to-consumer, $29.99 a month. Prime Video, $14.99 a month. Peacock, $11.99 a month. Paramount Plus, $11.99 a month. Fox One, $19.99 a month. It's also important to note, if you bundle ESPN and Fox One, you can get it for only $39.99 a month rather than $49.98. Netflix, 22.99 a month, and then NFL Sunday Ticket, $480.
Of course, the truth of the matter is, once upon a time,
hashtag
you couldn't watch the whole NFL season, right? So I mean, whatever. You could watch two games on
Sunday Ticket.
Three
debuts.
Games on Sunday. So what was the sweet spot when you could watch everything? In other words, there was a day and time in America where you just couldn't watch all the games. Or you had to go to a sports bar or they like whatever. You couldn't watch all the games, okay? And now you can watch all the games, but it will cost you a fortune. When was the sweet spot that you could watch everything you want to watch and yet you weren't paying a fortune? Did that time, that moment, that Brigadoon, did it exist?
So I would argue, if we're saying in the NFL era, I'm going to say it's the period from when Sunday Ticket launches through about 2012. Because cord cutting really starts pretty en masse from 2012 to about 20.
The other thing that's happened, the other big news in TV that has unfolded recently is, of course, with UFC being purchased by Paramount.
The American rights, yes.
Right. Being purchased by Paramount. Essentially, pay-per-view in America is dead. What has happened is that people have said, we're not going to try to have big events that we get you to pay $80 for.
Yep.
We're going to have big events that keep you subscribed to our channels.
Yes.
And so instead of saying, we're going to, pay whatever. I mean, back the way it used to be, the UFC, you'd have ESPN Plus.
Yep.
And for and whatever it was, if you watch the whole card, you got to pay $80 for
whatever
it was. Now, there is not going to be pay-per-view. Pay-per-view is going away as a phenomenon in America. And what there will be instead is people are just looking for properties that will get you to pay monthly fees to subscribe.
It seems to me the only thing that's left that's pure pay-per-view is boxing.
Right. Yeah,
I mean, Dana White did say this isn't necessarily the end of pay-per-view, but every analyst that I've seen has said effectively
is the end of pay-per-view. So there you go. All right, we're going to take a break. Sam Hardiman, Chris Harrington was reliable. Sam Hardiman was reliable. John Martin, not at all reliable. We'll talk to Sam coming up next. Jeff Gawkins Show, 92.9 FM, ESPN.
So here's the thing with homemade meals. Eating them is great, but all the chopping and measuring and cleanup, not so much. With new one-pan assemble and bake meals from Blue Apron, you get all the flavor of homemade meals with a fraction of the work. Just assemble the pre-chopped ingredients, bake in the oven, and enjoy. Shop Assemble and Bake at BlueApron.com. Get 50% off your first two orders with code APRON50. Terms and conditions apply. Visit BlueApron.com/terms for more.
All right, back on the Jeff Calkins Show, joined now by the very reliable Sam Hardiman. Unlike the very unreliable John Martin, I now have heard from him, Jeffrey. He said, I'm sorry. Got in at 5 a.m. and then didn't wake up for our show. I told him I did not accept the apology, that I would now leave him hanging someday when I was supposed to be on his show, because it's the way it's got to be, don't you think, Jeffrey? You got to teach lessons.
Absolutely, things, Jeff. They're not losses; they're lessons.
They're not losses. Things have to have consequences. But Sam Hardiman for the Daily Memphian is highly reliable, and here he is. Sam, how are you?
I'm well, Jeff. I don't have anywhere to be out at 5 a.m. So I'm here.
Well, so the first thing I wanted to do was I was reading. There's evidently a mini series, you think, Jeffrey? A series called Built in Birmingham.
I don't know if we'd call it a mini series or if it's like a docuseries.
A docuseries, Built in Birmingham. It's Tom Brady and the Blues. That's the name of the squad, evidently, the team over there. It's a soccer team, okay? And I was reading, a piece about Tom Brady and this show. And it's a little bit, I just want to read you this because I know you're a big Pats fan and a big Brady fan. And so this is the commentary. And I wanted to see if you agree. Not necessarily on the comments about the show, because I presume you haven't seen it. You haven't seen it, have you, Sam? Have you seen it?
I have no interest in this. Like, I got limited time.
Okay.
I'm not watching that.
All right, good. Tom Brady may be incredibly famous, obscenely successful, and outrageously handsome, but he has never been cool. This is a plain fact, one that Patriots fans like myself overlooked during his tenure there, and one that Patriot haters love to mock him for. Since his retirement, Brady has lost the magnetic appeal of his abilities with the ball in his hands, which has made stark his absent coolness. His commentary stint has been mediocre at best and awful at worst, and his unwavering but erroneous belief in his own charm is fully insufferable without the touchdowns and wins to mask it. In place of any kind of recognizably human personality, there is nothing but coach speak and corporate speak and brand consciousness, which makes it close to impossible for him to forge any kind of connection with an audience when he's not wearing pads. That hasn't stopped him from trying, which brings us to soccer. Built in Birmingham is the latest attempt to humanize and propagandize Brady, and in a perverse way, it succeeds at painting what feels like a true portrait of the former quarterback turned commentator and owner. This is not to say that the show succeeds in making Brady a compelling figure or even a sympathetic one. Instead, the show, which is terrible for a variety of reasons, almost all Brady-related, proves what has been obvious for years. Post-football Tom Brady is nothing but a platitude-spouting robotron incapable of self-awareness. It's kind of harsh, but do you agree?
I mean, this is a really complicated question, actually.
Okay. Sort through it for me.
Which I'm going to try to answer with, you know, my trademark nuance.
Uh-huh.
Tom Brady is not really that cool. He's really not. I mean, the Tom versus Time series. We remember when Facebook was getting in a content game and they did the Tom versus Time series,
yeah,
right?
Uh-huh. Yep.
I actually watched that, right? Like, that was an era of my life where I would watch such content.
Okay.
And he wasn't cool then, right? Like, even when he was throwing a football, he wasn't cool. He was kind of weird. I think like, what the piece is describing, the paragraphs, I haven't read the whole thing, you've read to me. I haven't read that. I just listened to it. I think, like, Tom Brady, the commercial figure, kind of sucks, right? Like, he's not... Like, true, there is nothing redeeming about him, right, in that regard.
There's nothing awful about him.
He is handsome. I mean, he's not a terrible human either.
Right, like, he's not a terrible human. That, I don't wanna, like, not cool. It's okay to not be cool.
Right. It's just, like, I'm sure, like, his friends like him, right? Like, they probably enjoy hanging out with him, but we don't see that guy. So, yeah, I mean, that's my general take on it is, like, Tom Brady, the guy that mass media is feeding me, isn't very cool. I think the Kelseys get less and less cool every week, right?
Interesting.
Like, I think, like, the more we're exposed to someone, the less cool they get, typically. I mean, is there any sports figure, the more we see them after they retire?
Peyton Manning is here's the thing. It's impossible to be as great as Tom Brady was at throwing the football at any one thing would be unbelievable to be that great at one thing, right? And why should that same human being be great as, which is effectively an actor. That's what he's, you know, and now it so happens that I think Peyton Manning is great at both of those things. Maybe a little less great on the football front. We could debate that, but is not as, is greater at the connecting with an audience thing. But that is, you know, who else didn't? Joe Montana. Like, Joe Montana was Joe Cool, but when you tried to, if there was a post-football career Joe Montana, he was terrible. So you know what happened? He just went away. You know, he just went, like, that wasn't his strength. But Tom isn't going away is the issue. And so it doesn't mean he's a bad human being. It's just he's not good at these jobs, right? Like, he's not good at these jobs. That's okay.
Yeah, exactly. That's okay. I mean, I, like, personally, like, wish that, like, a bunch of these figures that were really, like, my childhood, right? Like, Derek Jeter, Tom Brady, right? Peyton Manning. I kind of wish they would go away. Like, I wish we could have new stars, right? Like, it's cool that Ryan Fitzpatrick in Paul Bissonnette, like, guys that were kind of fringe guys when they played, right, in their respective sports. I mean, Fitzpatrick was a little better as a quarterback than Bissonnette was a hockey player.
No one knows who, like, Paul Bissonnette is except the two of us, right? Right, but yes.
Well, the internet does now.
Yes.
But to Sam's point, more people know him as a commentator than they did as a fourth liner.
Right, yeah.
Right.
So you would want them
that's
to...
That's where I'm at.
Yeah. Okay, you want these guys to go away. Yeah. I think Brady would profit from going away. He did have some funny lines at his statue unveiling, though.
I do not think he would profit from going away.
No, not profit. Not profit.
Because he's got about 40
not
million
profit
reasons.
Financially, yeah. No. Profit in terms of his reputation. The problem is he's just not... he's not great at those jobs. Like, you know, what's his name? The tight end. The tight end. Greg Olsen. Greg Olsen was not as good a football player. Better talker. Which is fine. Okay. Onward to the city of Memphis. Tell me, Sam, we went and had dinner, Claire and I, in the Edge District the other day. And there was a trolley stop. And I literally looked at her and I said, gosh, wouldn't it be nice if the trolleys still run? And she said, yeah, it sure would be nice if the top. What are the chances? And you had some news on this at the Daily Memphian. What are the odds that the I know you don't really need to give me odds. Tell me what's happening with the trolleys.
I mean, the odds are slim to none, right? Like they're more like it's more likely that like Cedric Coward is the NBA MVP. Probably that.
Wait, ever?
I went there.
Do you mean that ever? Do you think we'll never again have trolleys in Memphis?
No. I want to be clear. Like, you were in the Edge District, right? The Edge District trolley, Madison trolley.
Right, yeah.
Right?
That one's done.
That line, yeah. Okay. Like, yeah, Cedric Coward has a better odds of being NBA MVP, I think.
But a downtown
trolley. Yeah, but, like, in terms of the downtown trolley, I'm not going to put odds on that one, but there are some hiccups to getting that back, right? Like, MATA has said, and we reported this past week, and other outlets have too, is going to be very easy. MATA is now that it has sort of functioning leadership with the, you know, consultants that essentially the city of Memphis put at the top of the organization. They're fixing the trolleys. Okay. They are the brake issue that pulled the trolleys off the lines last year is being fixed. That's happening. The broader question is the trolleys, like everything at MATA, do not make money. Okay.
Right.
And so MATA did not fund them in the budget this year because they didn't have money in the budget to, it was either cut service or fund trolleys that aren't yet fixed. And so they didn't fund the trolleys. And so now it's a matter of, does the Memphis City Council see fit to allocate more funding to a bus system it does not like for the trolleys? And that's a really interesting question that I'm sure we'll answer. Is it the most pressing civic question in the world? Maybe not. But, yeah, it's going to be interesting to see whether or not we get the trolleys back. But it's not a question of whether or not they're going to work soon. It's a matter of do we have the money to throw at the trolleys running up and down Main Street.
Do we have a sense, ballpark, of what it costs to have the trolleys?
I'm still waiting on MATA to give me that answer. But it is more likely greater than a few million dollars a year.
And in there you said, will they fund the trolleys or a bus system they don't like? Explain that part of the sentence.
Yeah. So, you know, and we didn't get into this a ton, I think, on this program during budget season, but the Memphis Area Transit Authority is not exactly popular right now with the Memphis City Council. PricewaterhouseCoopers issued a scathing audit of the bus system that raised questions with American Express purchase cards that were used by, you know, the past two CEOs of the organization, how they outfitted and furnished their office space in One Commerce Square, which is here downtown, and a myriad other things. And so the Memphis City Council, which has now been briefed on that multiple times, that audit is not very happy about that. The Memphis City Council and the City of Memphis provide most of the operational money to MATA, about $30 million a year during the budget season this year. Multiple members of the Memphis City Council were okay with cutting the money they were going to give to MATA, and Memphis Mayor Paul Young stepped in and said, whoa, let's not do this. And so they don't like the bus system right now. They don't see a lot of positives in the bus system right now. And so when you're sort of out of the good graces of the people doling out the money, can you successfully go get the money for the trolleys that some people on the city council, while they may not like MATA, actually may want back? So that's going to be the interesting question.
Was there unhappiness largely with the prior administrations of MATA? Because now, as you point out, there's an interim CEO who was a consultant with this firm, Transpo. Are they displeased with this incarnation of MATA as well?
I don't think they're wild about it, right? And part of it is because the situation that Transpro's been dealt, right, is MATA wasn't exactly functioning at a high rate before Transpro got there. And while Transpro has probably improved things a good bit operationally, there just remains a total, you know, the $30 million that the city of Memphis allocates to MATA, plus the state and federal grants that MATA gets. But those state and federal grants that MATA gets have to be spent very carefully, which is something MATA wasn't doing that well in the past. It doesn't give you a lot of room to have a really good bus system. And then we've talked about this before, and people really need, I think about it. When you're talking about Memphis and you're talking about a bus system, Memphis has the same population roughly as Boston, Massachusetts. It is 5 times the geographic size of Boston, Massachusetts. It is a quarter of the size of the state of Rhode Island, my home state. Memphis city proper is. And so it becomes really difficult to run a functioning bus system in a 300-square-mile city. And that's another part of this issue, that every time we're talking about transit, every time we're talking about development in this community, the size of the city, 300 square miles, really matters.
I would like to talk to you more about XAI, but I gotta we built in a break, so I gotta take a break, and we'll pick up the story next week. Thank you, Sam. Appreciate it.
Bye. I am reliable.
You can read Sam's stuff. He is so reliable. You can read Sam's stuff at the Daily Memphian. We're going to take a break, back in a moment. Jeff Calkins Show, 92.9 FM ESPN.
I'm done with subscriptions. Streaming, fitness, razors, vitamins. I've got subscriptions for everything in my life. They lock you in, and half the time, I can't figure out how to unsubscribe. That's why I'm so excited about the new Blue Apron. Now you can get delicious meals delivered with no subscription needed, including new pre-made options. Keep the flavor. Ditch the subscription. Get 20% off your first 2 orders with code APRON20. Terms and conditions apply. Visit blueapron.com/terms for more.
All right, back on the Jeff Calkins Show. Here was the actual text from John Martin, and I want to see how you feel about it. I'm so sorry. I was out until 5 a.m. here and just waking up. That's why he didn't show up for his appointment on our show today.
Jeff, I'm going to quote the late, great Tommy Harrison, former offensive line coach at MUS, former coach at Millington.
Please.
Jeff, excuses are like buttholes.
How so?
Everybody's got them and they all stink.
Oh, that's really eloquent. Mm-hmm. That's
get
really
away with words.
That's really eloquent. Countdown to Greater Heights and Taylor Swift.
Oh, boy.
It's now a mere 7 hours and 5 minutes away, Jeffrey. Try to contain yourself. What else is coming up on 92.9?
Here's what's coming up next on Jason and John. Jason will be joined by Jeff Woods of WREG, who is retiring. Also, Coach Hurd will be with them. Or we'll be with him today at 1:25. Kevin Cerrito with me today on Jeff Wright and Company. CJ Hurt during hour number 2. David Cobb with Gabe at 5 o'clock.
All right, we got to get out of here. Back tomorrow. We're reliable. But for now, our work is done.